Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
It is episode 2 of our very special podcast, Giants versus Dodgers, with my buddy Draven. And it's bad timing for me because the Giants have just lost their 5th game in a row. Randy Rodriguez gave up a 3-run homer in the All-Star game.
Always fun to see that.
What did you go? Are you guys playing right now?
No, we start at 1. Oh, yeah, right now, actually. Yeah, first pitch is at 1:09, so... Yeah, West Coast times.
The only good thing is that you guys aren't killing it right now, so you haven't jacked up the lead on us. But I'm hoping.
Padres are, though, so be worried about that.
Yeah, I think the Padres were like 5 out. Giants were like 6.5 out, depending on what happened in the Dodgers series today. But like you said, you've told me this in text, and I think maybe even on the last show that we did, you guys just have way more room for error. The Giants, when the Giants play baseball like frauds, they don't have anybody to turn to. If Michael Conforto takes a dump in left field, you can find somebody else to replace.
He's taking a few of them this year and continues to do so.
I warned you about Conforto.
I feel bad for that guy because so many of his teammates have rallied around him. I mean, he's legitimately gone through some depression just because he can't get it going. I mean, I don't know if the algorithm gives you those weekly, like who's doing the worst in all the categories in the league as you're scrolling through social media. He's always like in the top 5 of our very offensive category, you know. And right now he's batting like 180 or something. That's his batting average. He's just horrible, like horrible. And I know you had told me that he tends to pick it up again in the second half, but he still hasn't. You know, he has little flares here and there, but he just can't get it going. So it is the trade. We're coming up on the trade deadline. I'm sure they have him as bait, but then again, who's going to want him? You know, so we took a risk and it just didn't pay off. It didn't pay off. There's a couple stories like that for us this year. Tanner Scott is another one, you know, $75 million over 4 years. He leads the league in blown saves. And they've tried to tweak his mechanics. It's not really working. So I don't know. And that's a big investment. We got him for 4 years.
He gave up the home run to Matos that I thought was going to rejuvenate the Giants, but then they lost it in the extra innings. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, the reason why I wanted to bring Draven back on sooner than we're going to do this, you know, maybe 4 or 5 times a year. But I want because the Giants and the Dodgers played right before the All-Star break. And just like happened the first time that they played in L.A., Giants won the first game. And then the Dodgers won the back end, the 2 games of the 3-gamer. So Dodgers have taken the series so far, both series. They're 4-2 against the Giants. I think they play 2 more times this year. So some opportunity. But, you know, for me, because the Dodgers are the measuring stick, I'm looking, okay, how do we play against these guys? How do we measure up? What's the litmus test here? And the Giants... that first game, they go out there and they play like hell, and then it's these back two games that it's almost like they exhaust themselves, and right. then you guys just pick up the pieces. But I mean, I'm not disappointed in the way that they've played, because outside of that one game, which was the Devers trade where you guys just killed us, the games have been really competitive. But it's just you guys have that extra gear in those last couple innings to pull away. So not disappointed in how they've played, but then they go into Toronto and they get swept, and it's just like, come on, like this is ridiculous. So that's why I call them the fraudulent Giants. And you know, I've done this study, Brad and I, on Thompson and Clark. I wanted to see, since 2018-2019 timeframe, the halves of the season. And outside of 2021, where the Giants put up dominant first halves and second halves, they either play above 500 in one or in the beginning first half or the second half, but then the opposite half, they play underwater. So that's my fear about this season, is they started out good. This has been their best first half since 2021, and even before that, since probably 2016 or 17. But it's the fall off. It's like they can't put together two halves, which is part of baseball. It's the 162 game season. It's why the thing is so hard. If you play great for one half and then you don't play great for the second half, then you're not a good team. And that's my worry for the Giants. Where do you fit, or where do you sit right now with the Dodgers? Because they are not playing as dominantly as you probably want, but because of what we said, so many resources, you're still easily in first place, and you know, five games ahead without even playing probably your B-plus baseball.
So that has been the story of the Dodgers all season. All season we've been hearing, ever since they started the season 8-0, it's been like, well, it's 8-0, but they haven't played their best baseball, just because we've been hit with the injury bug, especially with the pitching this year. So everybody, there's that elusive golden carrot of like, once we get Snell back in there, you know, once we get Glasnow back in there, then you're going to see the dominant Dodgers, because we're going to have a healthy rotation. That's not, it's looking like it's not going to happen, possibly for the entire year, unfortunately. But now what's more concerning and what's getting more of the attention is the season that Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts are having, because their numbers are very subpar. And now people are asking questions, because it's not they're not going out like they're not in a slump. This has been representative. I mean, Freddie Freeman started off pretty hot. I mean, he was batting like 380 for a long time. I think April and May, but once June came around, he settled in and he's struggling quite. And people are thinking he's hurt and he's just not telling anyone. People are studying his movements around first base, the way he walks. And then with Mookie, I mean, everybody's saying, well, I mean, that's what happens when you go to right field or shortstop. You know, he's been struggling offensively because of the move defensively. And so it's now the question is, if they don't get out of the slump, what's going to happen? You know, because we also lost Max Muncy. He's probably not going to come back till late August, early September. And our, you know, our bats are struggling. Teoscar came back from an injury, never really got it back. So now it's more, this is going to be the baseline. I think as Dodger fans and the people that analyze the team, they're thinking this is the baseline. There is no golden carrot anymore. You know, we're going to have to just kind of be like any other team and just grind our way through, which is what happened last year, which is what makes it so frustrating, because Andrew Friedman actually went out there and made some big moves, so we don't have to go through the shit we went through last year. And here we are going through it again, you know. And there's also a lot of people, and I don't know, there's people are blaming the coaching staff, because I feel like the pitching problem is a Dodger problem. Like we had, I don't know if you saw the list. I know you guys up in the Bay Area hate us, so you guys are always keeping tabs on us. I don't know if you ever saw the list. At one time, we had something like 17 pitchers on the IL. 17.
And I'm looking at a lot of the similar elbow injuries too.
Yeah, yeah. And then everybody's saying that's why Mark Pryor only had like five seasons in the big leagues. And so now there's people looking at the coaching staff. What are they doing wrong? So it's not all, you know, we do have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to talent, but they all have broken wheels in one way or another. So it's been very frustrating. To answer your question, it's different this year because the schedule is a little bit weird. We've talked about it in the previous episode where I think the divisional games are on the back end this year, which is weird. We got you guys for a couple more. I think it's two more series. The Padres are coming to town again. I think one last time. We got the Diamondbacks. So there's a lot this year. The divisional series are back ended. So that I don't know if we have any precedent for how that we would the we would look record wise, you know, because this has never happened before. I think this is the first year where the schedule is as wonky as it's been. So we'll see what happens.
So the theory. So you talked about the arm injuries. I have a friend who writes for Baseball Prospectus. And he was talking to somebody, and this was a player who basically validated the elbow injuries and said, look, if I pitched like, you know, I was going to pitch 10, you know, 9 innings every game, I didn't have good enough stuff to where I would last. But if I just threw as hard as I could for 2 or 3 innings, knowing that more than likely I was going to hurt my arm, that's what got me to the big leagues. And I was able to make some money and be on a couple teams. And thus I had a career. But if I didn't do that, I wasn't going to even make the pros. So that is kind of the theory of, you know, teaching these guys, you know, kind of throwing as hard as they are and everything. It's two different philosophies. Now, it's not great for the longevity of some of these kids.
Well, because none of them really. None of them. I was looking at the stats the other day, and it's something like 75% of major league pitchers are going on the IL for Tommy John, and it's almost like now when you sign a pitcher, you have to budget in that year off. You have to nowadays, especially if it's a starting pitcher, because if you notice, you know, these guys that are signed for 7-8 years, they always have that 1 year off to get Tommy John. Always. I don't, you know, there's very few that don't. So it's been a struggle to keep these guys healthy. And also analytics has a lot to do with it, because now with the whole idea of like, once the third time the rotation comes around, they figured you out. Right. So like you said, the mentality is just give us a hard 5, a hard 6. Once the rotation comes around the third time, or not the rotation, the lineup, once they come around the third time, we're going to pull you anyway. So it's a mixture of a lot of things that have created this dynamic where pitchers are blowing out their arm very, very early on in their careers. I would like to see some sort of somebody kind of go back to the old school way of doing it. Like maybe if a pitcher has the stuff, like you said, and they're able to just stay below 95 miles per hour, you know, and see where that gets them, just using technique like a Greg Maddux type. But we'll see. I think these young kids, they don't allow that philosophy to get through, like, you know, AA ball or AAA ball. So it's hard for them to come up to the big leagues with that mentality.
What did you think of seeing your boy Kershaw in the All-Star game?
I loved it. And it was a very emotional. He's one of the last remaining horses from back in the old school, you know? And so he's I don't think we're going to see another Kershaw again in a very, very, very long time. Not with these younger generation. He didn't really want to be there. He felt awkward being there. It said it took him a long time to really kind of just accept it, because he knows he hasn't had the best season this season. And it was just like a little thank you, All-Star. And it's actually kind of weird, because he feels like the league is retiring him. And he's like, I haven't announced that I might come back next year. I don't. And he feels that the league itself is kind of giving him a swan song all around the country, you know? So I think it started when they made a big deal out of that 3K, you know, the whole game where he was going to get 3,000 strikeouts.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's been like the celebration of his career. And he's like, yo, I'm still playing and I might play next year, you know, because he's only 37 years old. I mean, but he's just been around since he was, I think he came up when he was 20 or something. But yeah, he's one of the last guys from that era, like that last era of like giving you 200 plus innings and all that stuff. You know, you don't see those guys anymore.
Yeah, he and Bumgarner will kind of be tied at the hip, because Kershaw was the much better regular season pitcher, and he's going to have the more storied career because of the longevity and the Cy Youngs and such. And then postseason, it turns to Bumgarner when it comes to you know, who's the guy that you wanted to give the ball in the seventh game of the World Series or whatever. And Kershaw himself didn't have those great playoff games. So it those are the two guys that I think of when you say that. The Giants have one right now who is struggling so badly, Justin Verlander. I think he's 0-8 right now. I mean, they don't hit when he pitches, so that's some of it. But, you know, he'll have a good inning, and then he'll throw a 94-mile-per-hour fastball that someone just yanks over the fence, like, very easily. And I'm like, oh, do we need this guy right now? What's the value of having him in the rotation? And I'm sure there's some value in the clubhouse. There's some value with, because they have a young pitching staff where he can give them some insight and stuff. But so, yeah, those guys are gone. You know, Zach Greinke still in the league? I know.
No, he hasn't been in the league for a couple of years.
Max Scherzer's pitching with the Blue Jays, I think.
And that's one of those guys that you see him, you know, the common thing at the end of their careers where they're just jumping around different teams, you know, just trying to catch another day, you know. Those guys are all gone. And then after that, it's a whole new story. You know, I mean, none of these guys, some of these records are never going to be broken because the younger generation is not going to be given a shot to break it. You know, when was the last time we saw one pitcher complete a no hitter? It's been a while, you know?
Yeah.
Because now they have the team completing the no hitter, which is ridiculous. So that's kind of been the story of the Dodgers. And then another big story is Ohtani. Ohtani has looked pretty good on the mound since he came back, but his numbers have dipped offensively. Yeah, you know. So
you guys knew was probably going to happen, right? Like, that's part of the equation in getting him back in the rotation, was the numbers were going to dip a little bit.
Yeah. We knew that, and it's not his fault, right? I mean, it's expected. I mean, the guy is not Superman. Sometimes he plays like he is, but he's not.
He kind of is Superman, I feel.
I mean, in a lot of ways, he is even now. But now the question becomes, like, do we keep him as a hitter? Like, he's such a great hitter, but then again, he himself sees himself as a pitcher who can hit. You know,
he wouldn't have signed with the Dodgers if they didn't let him pitch, I don't think.
Right. No, he's a pitcher. He's gone on record as saying, I am a pitcher that can hit. I am not a hitter that can pitch. That's what he's. And so if they ice him as a pitcher, he's going to be very upset.
Yeah. So what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk a little bit about the All-Star game, just All-Star game memories, because the All-Star game is not the same as when we were growing up. I also wanted to
talk to you. Well, the game itself is not the same as when we were growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about was, because we have guys like Judge and Ohtani, just kind of thinking back to the guys that we've seen and comparing them to those guys. And then, of course, I love the Ohtani and Bonds comparison, just because, you know, when I watch Ohtani hit, he doesn't walk as much as Barry did, and he doesn't have like that strike zone discipline that Barry did. But when the sound of the baseball hitting the bat, that sound is very reminiscent of Barry to me. So we'll talk about those guys. And then also, last time we did like our most hated Giants and Dodgers players, and we're going to flip this one a little bit of the most respected. Like, who did we respect? Even though we disliked them because of their colors, but who were
that's gonna be hard for me, but I'll play along.
I have some old school ones. I don't have a lot of like new school ones.
Remember,
other than Ohtani, but I have a lot of old ones.
I told you that I'm very much into Shawn Michaels. What he told Brett back in '97. You know, you put me over, that's fine, but I'll never put you over. You know, I'm paraphrasing there, but we know what he was saying. And so, so I'll do my best, but it's not going to be easy, because you just saying Barry Bonds just makes my blood boil, because I will never. Ever approve that man getting approved for any kind of Hall of Fame celebration. How dare you even compare him to Ohtani when the man was a cheater? You know, his head sold up about two times the original size he came in at. And you actually Pearl Harbored me with that one, because I just saw it on the you had the little blurb there, and I was like, he's comparing Barry Bonds. No, we're not gonna do that. And besides, Ohtani had so many other off the field reasons why he's such a legend, and he's going to be bigger than life if he isn't already. I mean, the cultural impact he's had on baseball, just the finances of the sport. I mean, the other day I was looking at pricing for every stadium that Ohtani visits, and you see the bump, you know, prices go up $20-$30 per ticket when he's coming to town in any other market, because people want to see him. Did Barry Bonds have that impact? Maybe in 98, maybe in 2001. I don't know if any other year, because he was chasing the home run records. But then you talk about all the markets that Ohtani has opened, right? International markets. There's absolutely, Ohtani's up here and Barry Bonds is like right here. Let's not even get into the negative effect that Barry had on the game.
There's another business way to look at this, though, in that baseball in the U.S. is not nearly as popular today as it was in the late 90s and early 2000s.
The correlation is not going to be Barry Bonds, because one thing we'll get to about when we're talking about the All-Star game, Major League Baseball was better at creating superstars during that era than they are now. I mean, you know, they try, but they don't. The superstars today, they don't have the sustainability that the older guys had, you know. And again, it could also be me seeing it through biased eyes, you know, nostalgic eyes, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like back when I was, you know, a young man, when I was a teenager in the 90s, maybe even early 2000s, some of these guys, their names resonated, man. You said a name and you just knew. King Griffey Jr., you knew exactly who he was. Even Barry Bonds, you know exactly who he was. Like Mike Piazza, like these guys were all larger than life, and I feel like almost every team had one of those guys. Whereas now, like even looking at the All-Star game, like I didn't even know who half of these guys were, and I follow the damn sport.
You weren't like, oh, Junior Caminero, like
no. And the thing was like, and I know they're trying, right? Like with Cal Raleigh, I mean, they're trying with him. He got over. He's over. Big dude, you know, the big dumper, as they call him. But we already had that before, you know. I mean, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. a couple years ago was kind of a big deal. Fernando Tatis Jr. was a big deal. And it just seems like they're not sustainable. Yeah, and they're local markets, of course. We're not talking about local markets. But if I was to go to a basketball game, right, and I was to pull over, like, some chick that was with her date, with the guy that was a fan of the Lakers, and I was like, do you know who Fernando Tatis Jr. is? She wouldn't know who that is, you know? She wouldn't. I mean, maybe, but odds are she wouldn't. I don't know. And that's like the San Diego market, which is 90 minutes away from here. So we don't see the superstars of yesteryear like we did back then.
It's a much more localized game than it was when we were growing up. For sure. 100%.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know, the NFL, like, I think one of the, I don't know if this is like a fake history or whatever, but when we were growing up, baseball was called the America's pastime. You know, that's what everyone called it. But the NFL was already just as or more popular than baseball was when we were growing up. It's just baseball marketed itself so much as like apple pie and, you know, just Americana and this and that. And so they kept that reputation for a while just based off of marketing. But then, you know, you'd start to look at those TV ratings, or you'd look at the popularity, or you'd talk to people about football, and like football was just way more popular. And that's where we are now. Now, basketball, you know, basketball is an interesting one because it's probably a little bit closer to baseball than it is to football. But they do have more marketable young players because there's only five players on the court at a time for a team. And so you get to see these faces. And, you know, baseball is 25 man rosters, and football, you know, is helmets and pads and uniforms. So the idea that Major League Baseball is not as much of a national sport, I think, is legitimate. I think it is 100% a real deal. Who actually stands out in today's game? We talked about Ohtani. We talked about Judge. Who else is like a national baseball star outside of those two guys?
That's a good. I think Mookie. You know, I get a little rumblings when I go to these other stadiums. Mookie's the guy that people know. And it might be because he's a Dodger. I don't know if it was like that when he was with the Red Sox. But even Mookie, right? Mookie's like you have Judge, you have Ohtani, and then Mookie's like down here if he was the third guy.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think. I mean, I can't think of anybody. I really can't.
A couple years ago, may have been Bryce Harper because he came up when he was like a teenager, essentially.
Right.
Mookie's a good one, but Mookie's a more of like a everyday kind of dude. He's not like the giant 6'7" Judge, or
right.
He's more of like an everyman kind of guy, which I think I like about him. You know, he goes out and bowls 300 games and stuff. The other one is Acuna, but he's been hurt a lot. But you watch that guy play and you're like, how is this guy not a much bigger star? You see the throw that he made to
and it was so like matter of fact. He's awesome, but no, he's one of those guys. Let's go ahead and put it in wrestling terms, right? Because that's how my brain works. Acuna's like a Bret Hart kind of guy. He's not a Hulk Hogan kind of guy. He's a Shawn Michaels kind of guy. So we're looking at the Hulk Hogan kind of guy, right? The big top, tippy top, you know, penetrate culture kind of guys. Maybe, what about Juan Soto? What do you think of Juan Soto?
No. I mean, I would have loved if he played for the Giants, but, you know, he's not even at the Bryce Harper level, because at least Bryce Harper, you know, they won a World Series and he was one of the top players in a World Series. But going back to what you were talking about, the pitching, the starting pitchers used to be stars, right? I can go back to Doc Gooden. Like, who was a more in my youth, there was no more of an exciting pitcher to watch than Doc Gooden. Nolan Ryan, someone who withstood the test of time. Then you go to like Pedro and Maddox and Randy Johnson. Who's the guy right now? Is it Skeens? I guess it's Skeens.
It's Skeens, yeah. But then again, they're not allowed to be those performers that a Maddox was. You know, again, even back then, you had like a Tony Gwynn, you know, who was awesome. Just so many. Frank Thomas, I mean, like I said earlier, Ken Griffey Jr., you know, Mark McGwire. I mean, just in the old the A's of the late 80s. I mean, you had McGwire, Canseco, and Henderson just in that team alone. And look, I'm from LA. They're Oakland. It's a whole different market. And even I knew of the myth of those guys, you know, and how dangerous the A's were. Dennis Eckersley, how about that guy? You know, everybody knew who Dennis Eckersley was.
I think you just have fond memories of those guys because you pimped them in the World Series. I think that's
No. Trust me, I was always scared of those guys. All right, I'll give you a great example. Middle of the road, even low tier guys like the Cincinnati's Reds Nasty Boys. You know, Rob Dibble. You know, like look, these are all characters. Like,
well, what about Kirby Puckett, who played in Minnesota? Now, Minnesota had some good teams, which helped because they went to the World Series and won some World Series. But can you name a Minnesota Twins player right now off the top of your head? Like, you probably can, but it'll take you.
Correa's with
Correa's their shortstop.
That fucking cheater.
Byron Buxton, I guess, would be another one. But yeah, like it's hard, and everybody knew who Kirby Puckett was in the late 80s.
And think about it like this too, Garrett. It's like we didn't have cable back then. It was all through magazines, through scuttlebutt. We couldn't see these guys.
Baseball cards,
which was so influential back in the day. We didn't have we didn't have access to these players. We didn't have YouTube. We didn't have MLB Network. So this idea that I was able to name off those three Oakland A's, I mean, I didn't see them every day, but I knew about them, and I knew that they were dangerous, and they were great ball players, you know. And we don't have that anymore. And I have a question for you. Do you think that the reason why we don't have that, well, I'm sure there's a lot of reasons. This is a very nuanced topic, but one of the reasons is because of the lack of white ball players, because there's a lot of like Dominicans, Venezuelans, you know, even like Japanese ball players. I don't think this is about racism or anything like that. It's human nature to want to relate to your own, right? And so the Americans are like, well, I don't see any great white ball player there, so I'm gonna gravitate towards the NFL, which has the more traditional, you know, corn fed Midwestern guys. You know, what do you think about that?
I mean, it's an interesting thing. Now, what I thought you were gonna say. Because I thought you were going to talk about the lack of African American baseball players.
Well, that's another. Yeah, that's
there aren't very many, and which is why someone like Mookie Betts stands out. You know, when I was growing up, the coolest guy I thought, and I always thought this guy was going to be a much better player, but you know, at middle of his career, he wasn't as good, but he did play for the Dodgers. Eric Davis, I just was like, this guy is the coolest guy I've ever seen play baseball. He could run. He could hit for power. He could take balls away in center field. And like guys like that don't seem to play baseball anymore. They may play another sport. They may go play basketball or whatever. But like, who's an Eric Davis of today? I don't know if we have one. He was just like this guy who...
I used to love Eric Davis.
It wasn't even big. He was kind of like long and lean, but the dude hit the hell out of the baseball. Powerful guy. Like I don't see any Eric Davises in today's game.
Yeah, no, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head. I mean, like you said, Mookie's. That's why he stands out. The African American population has taken a big hit. I know. Deion Sanders had this wacky theory, whether or not there's any validity to it, but he said it's because, you know, fathers are not taking their kids to the games anymore. They're not playing baseball with them. And he did say something interesting. He's like, to make it in baseball, it's an investment that's very expensive very early on, you know, taking them through the minor leagues and all that, or not minor leagues, little leagues and park leagues and stuff like that. It's expensive, you know? So whereas if you want to ball up, you just go catch a pickup game somewhere, you know, and you could get good that way. So that was his point. That's why we're not seeing a lot of African American players anymore.
Well, and his kids, they played football. They didn't play baseball.
Right. One of the things that remind me about Eric Davis is how, you know what also we don't see anymore is the wacky batting stance. We don't see those anymore, man. Because Eric Davis had a very unusual one where he would hold the bat down by his hips.
Yeah.
Like he wouldn't do, he was like down here, and then he would do like a little swivel, and then he would pick it up. But Gary Sheffield has got to have the all-time wackiest batting stance ever. Yeah. Oh. they all look the same nowadays, but that's because these coaches want them to have a certain stance.
Yeah. So what is one of your favorite All-Star? Did you watch the whole All-Star game this year? I watched the first four innings, and then I did something else, and then I saw the National League had a giant lead, and I was like, okay, finally they're gonna win this game. And then I come back and I was like, wait, the game was tied? What happened?
Yes.
And then they did this crazy home run derby hit off thing to win it.
You know, I don't have memories of particular All-Star. They all bleed together because when I was growing up, it was always the same guys that would make it every year. And you know, I would mark out for the little guy that got an invitation back in the day. For the people that don't know, because I don't think it's like this anymore, because there was a lot of bias. But back in the day, the fan voting, it's always been the fan voting gives you the starters.
Yeah.
But back in the day, the coaching staff would select the reserves. It wasn't MLB. It was the coaching staff. I don't think it's like that anymore. Because what happens was that you have all those years that Bobby Cox would make it to the World Series, you had a bunch of Braves being in the All-Star game. So it was unfair. Like you have like the Jeff Blausers of the world being All-Stars. It's like this, you know? So they changed it to where MLB selects all the reserves now, I think. I don't know.
The one thing that's always been cool about the All-Star game is that you had a player from your team no matter what.
Yeah, and that is not the case with other sports.
No, no, like the NBA All-Star Game, they only have like 12 players, so you can't even get one. And then the Pro Bowl, who even I don't even know how the Pro Bowl even works. Do they play flag football now or something? But so what would happen is like I went to 1984 All-Star Game. I think my dad bought like a weekend ticket plan for the Giants. So this is a season where they lost 90 some odd games. And but one of the things is if you buy the ticket plan, then you get a chance to buy the All-Star Game ticket. So we went and I remember very clearly it was so windy that my dad had just bought a brand new Giants hat and he's wearing it. And as we get to our seats, the wind takes the hat off his head and it was gone for good. So I remember that. But here's this is what this game is famous for. I just looked it up to make sure I was 100% sure. You'll like this one. So in I don't remember. I think it's maybe the fourth and the fifth inning. So Fernando Valenzuela is pitching in the fourth inning, strikes out Dave Winfield, Reggie Jackson, and George Brett, three in a row. Mm-hmm. Then Dwight Gooden replaces him, and Dwight Gooden was only 19 at this point. And Dwight Gooden strikes out Lance Parrish, Chet Lemon, and Alvin Davis. So the two of them together struck out six AL All-Stars in a row. And the NL won. The NL was always winning back then when I was growing up. But that is like my biggest memory because, you know, I was there. But the like early... When in my fandom, the Giants weren't good. So if I saw, you know, in 1985, the Giants lost 100 games. Scott Gerelts is their one all-star, and he's like their closer, and he's not even that good of a closer. And I was like, oh, like that's our guy. And so he plays. And then, you know, they start to get better, and you get to see Will Clark. And Will Clark starting in the all-star game was such a big deal. It's like, oh, wow, we got a guy who finally was able to start. But that's the All-Star game to me, was just having representation of your team. And then when the Giants got better, like, you know, 1993 at Camden, that's Barry's first year. And I think, you know, he's the top vote getter and he's like, that's like, he's the star. And he like, I think he triples in like his first at bat. And so by then, you know, you're like, okay, these are my guys and the Giants are actually good. But yeah, as a kid, it would just be the representation. Bob Brenly and Chili Davis and Jeffrey Leonard and Chris Brown, not the singer Chris Brown, but the third baseman named Chris Brown. And those guys just making the team, I would get so fired up and I would watch because they, you know, they weren't starting, they were a replacement. And so it's getting, you're getting to like the fifth, the sixth, and you're like, oh man, is, you know, Fat Lasorda going to like put these guys in or is he not going to put them in because they're Giants players? Like that's kind of the thing.
Well, that was only 1989 because that's the only time that Lasorda managed when you were coming up. That would have
been
the only
guys
time.
Were on their coaching staffs and stuff. So
yes, yes.
So, but yeah, that's what the All-Star game, that's when it really meant something to me. And I would record the games and I'd record the home run derbies and I would just have them on videotapes and just, you know, pop them in every once in a while and, you know, just watch the old players and the old lineups. I remember at the 84 All-Star game, I actually took score. I kept score for about four innings or something, and so I had that with me for a long time.
Like the traditional way of keeping score with the numbers.
In the box. In the scorebook. I had that. So.
Yeah, so with me, I'm with you. Like again, they all kind of bleed together, and you know what it is too, is that it was a game where you're not gonna see a lot of like exciting moments in the game because they don't want to get hurt. So to me, the All-Star game is more representative of just being in awe of seeing all these great superstars together at a time where you wouldn't see that. Now with interleague play, you see that all the time, right? But back then, I mean, you're seeing like Pudge Rodriguez and Sandy Alomar Jr. and Wade Boggs, you know, they're in the, you know, and you see them kind of like interacting with each other and stuff. And as a kid that never got to really see the American League guys, it was just awesome. Like it was like, oh shit, what's going to happen? And like you said, seeing some of the more like the lesser known guys that were just having a good season that season. Like I remember with me, like I felt when Mike Sharperson made the All-Star game, I think it was 92 or 91. It was awesome for me because he was the only Dodger that made it that year. Because we had such a horrible season in 92. And when they introduced him, he had like one of those like Paulie Dangerously phones. Remember those? And he says from the Dodgers, Mike Sharp, and he's calling his mom on his phone while they actually have the camera on him, you know, and he's like, Bob, you know. But yeah, just seeing the Mike Sharpersons of the world make it. Unfortunately, he would pass away like a year later in a car accident. But he was one of those guys. Like you said, like those guys that just never get any recognition. They have one good season, and then they make it to the All-Star game, and that is their, you know, one of their biggest highlights of their career. but another thing too that towards the end, when I was going into early adulthood, like maybe like 19, 20 years old, I started getting frustrated because it was always the same guys. Like it was always the two catchers are always going to catch is Pudge Rodriguez and Sandy Alomar Jr. Like Wade Boggs, he had third base. There was never going to be another star other than Wade Boggs.
Unlocked.
The outfield was always Tony Gwynn, Barry Bonds, you know, and the American League, it was always Ken Griffey Jr. It was the same guys year in and year out. And there came a point where I was like, you know what? I'm tired of this. You know, like it's not, like give other guys a chance. So that was kind of the memories of that era. But again, what the common thread here is that all these superstars, these guys were all superstars. Nowadays, you don't see these guys. Ohtani and Aaron Judge are the only superstars now.
All right, let's talk about – I have a list for you. Let's talk about the best players that we've seen in our lifetime. And we'll measure them against like a Judge and an Ohtani. So I actually pulled a list of wins against replacement isn't necessarily the only statistic you need to look at, but it kind of gives you a nice little look back at the great historical season. So if we go, I put it at like 1985, just because that's when I really started paying attention. But Ricky Henderson, guys like Ricky, guys like Cal Ripken Jr. Mm-hmm. There were, from a pitcher standpoint, Roger Clemens and Pedro, A-Rod in 2000 before he got heavy into the juice, Bonds 2001, he had 11.9 WAR, Randy Johnson, who we mentioned, Ichiro had a 9.2 WAR in 2004, Pujols 9.7 in 2009, someone we didn't mention, but kind of falls on a popularity scale in a way, Mike Trout, who was like an incredible player who really still, I feel like, never got the recognition. Now he's always hurt, but when he was like the best player in the league, I feel like baseball was kind of struggling at marketing him, and he never really got that.
Well, he was in with the Angels, who are very much like a small market team, and they're always going to be in the shadow of the Dodgers, so that also hurt him. I mean, think about it. They had Ohtani and Trout at the same time, you know? And somehow they're still struggling to make money. They were never able to capitalize and market Ohtani or Trout as these two guys that you come and see, you know, once in a lifetime. And yeah, he's kind of a lot of people here locally have written articles about him, like, because he kind of made a deal with the devil, right? He was like, okay, I'm gonna 12 years, $300 million, but this is where I'm gonna be at. Like, you know, I'm never really gonna be competing for a championship. And his legacy is never going to be well known as it should be, because he took the money to stay with that team. So that's how there's been a lot of articles written about whether he made the right decision or not by doing that.
Hey, you know, his bank account is cool with it. But yeah, that's the risk in signing these long-term deals. Mookie Betts, your guy in 2016, his war is starting here. And we're talking MVP-like seasons from him. Bregman and Cody Bellinger had a couple of really good seasons in the late 2010s. And then Shohei comes in and he starts dominating. Shohei and Judge. And like I said, Acuna, and now someone who last year was on the come up was Bobby Witt Jr. So I named a bunch of guys. Now, if you were to describe, like, you know, the best players you've ever seen in your lifetime, you've mentioned Ken Griffey Jr. a couple of times. You know,
that's my guy.
When I was growing up, like, the best hitter was Don Mattingly. Like, he was like the best hitter in the game, but then he had the back injury, and so he had like the short shelf life as the best player. George Brett, kind of longevity. Cal Ripken, longevity. But
Robin Yount, longevity.
Yeah, and two different positions too, shortstop and center field. But Ken Griffey Jr. stands out in a way because he came up marketed as the next big thing, and he kind of fulfilled that. I got to see him in single A ball because they came through San Jose. I think he was with the San Bernardino Spirit, and so that was kind of the thing. It's like, oh, they're going to do a doubleheader, come watch Ken Griffey Jr. play. He was signing autographs. I think I got his autograph on like a program or something. But then he barrel rolled at second base into my guy, John Patterson, and they almost came to blows. So then I scribbled out the Griffey Jr. autograph. But he's one of those guys who he came up and like people, you know, the upper deck baseball card, you circled him. You're like, that's going to be the next guy. And he was. And that, you know how hard that is when they point the finger at you as the next great player. And then you actually become the greatest player in the game.
Well, Otani also had that labeled on him early on. And he succeeded.
There's no better combined power and average on base guy. I think he and Judge are the two top guys. But who else would have been on your best players that you've ever seen list?
Well, okay, so yeah, like you said, King Griffey was my guy. Daryl Strawberry was always that sentimental favorite because he was kind of like the first guy that I was exposed to and all that stuff. But I mean, his career, you know, wasn't very, as far as being a superstar and being productive, it wasn't very long. It really was from 84 to around 90 or something. But a couple of guys that to me were consistent, I think of consistency, right? Like Ishiro was always consistent in my eyes. And Tony Gwynn was always consistent, always a guy that was flirting with 400, which was amazing. He used the entire field. He wasn't a five-tool player by any means, because he was always a heavy guy. He wasn't going to steal bases, but he was a great defender. Everything was, you know, with Tony Gwynn. So I would have to say King Griffey Jr. and Tony Gwynn as my top two. Throw Ichiro in there. Frank Thomas was another guy that was very consistent. Great first baseman. Big dude for the time. I mean, big. This guy could have been a football player. And so those would be the guys that I could think of coming up, where like, these are the greatest guys, the greatest ball players of all time, you know?
So if we're going to
never Barry Bonds, though, even before the controversy, even when he was with the Pirates, I was just never a Barry Bonds. Like, I never really saw it.
Yeah. He wasn't very fan friendly, I would say. Okay. So if we look at top 20 cumulative all time war, the only player in the top 10 who comes from the time frame that you and I would have been watching is Bonds, 162.8. He's ahead of Ruth and Mays, and Henry Aaron is fifth. But then after you get to the top 10, A-Rod is at 12, and you know he also has the steroid bullseye. But then you get to number 14, and here's somebody who I don't know if he even gets the credit. Because similarly, I wouldn't call him necessarily a fan favorite, especially in his early days, was Ricky Henderson. Ricky Henderson is 14th all-time, going by position players, in war. Mike Schmidt, who I don't think would have been on either of our lists as like the best player you ever saw. He's 19th. Pujols is 20th. Where would you? I would say that Judge and Shohei. I would have Judge and Shohei. Now we're fast forwarding. We're expecting them to keep playing at the at a very high level for the next 5 years. But I feel like I would rather have their careers than, you know, than Mike Schmidt's career. Mike Schmidt was a really good player, but I wouldn't consider him one of the greatest players I ever saw.
No, but also there's other variables we have to bring up in this conversation. One of them is charisma, and the other one is marketing. Because look at where these two guys are from. They're from New York and LA, the two biggest markets in the country, and so they're gonna get a lot of attention, right? And also because I was thinking back to King Griffey Jr., like that was a very charismatic guy. You know, having the batting practice with the hat backwards and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a very impressionable teenager like that, you know, that spoke to me, you know, just the way he carried himself.
He got a lot of kids in trouble in Little League, too, because they wanted to wear the hat backwards. And then you had the coaches saying, nope, turn your hat around. But they were doing it because it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool because King Griffey did it, you know, and he's one of those guys that's always been, he's the opposite of Barry Bonds, the guy. He's always super humble. Like they interview him even to this day, you know, he always puts the other guys over. And it's to me, the tragedy of King Griffey Jr. is that he played at the Kingdom all those years and he really fucked up his ankles. And it was never really the same because when he went to the Reds, he was never really the same after that.
Interestingly, but, also not a weightlifting guy, really. He and Will Clark, two really, really great hitters. And they weren't weightlifting guys. They didn't like the way that, you know, the musculature changed. They thought it was going to change their swing and such.
Or John Crook, but you could tell with John Crook. I really think that location of where you play and charisma has a lot to do with it. There is a factor there that really makes us keep these guys in our own mind more so than like a Barry Larkin, for example, right?
Yeah.
Like Barry Larkin was also a great ball player,
yep.
But he was a very quiet, kind of subdued guy. So I think that has a lot to do with it in this conversation as well.
You mentioned a guy who would never be considered one of the greatest players because of the position he played. But for a long time, Frank Thomas, for a right-handed hitter, his ability to hit the ball to all fields, to hit the ball with power, to hit the ball for a high average, and to walk a lot, like he was a scary dude. But he's never going to get the credit because he played first base and he DH'd and he didn't really steal bases, wasn't a great base runner in that sense. So some of it is also like all around kind of players who I think we kind of look at, like Junior. Junior didn't really steal a ton of bases, but you didn't think that he wasn't fast and athletic. I mean, this dude was climbing up walls to take away home runs and stuff.
Right.
So I think that plays a bit. I know you're anti-Bonds, but the thing about Bonds, and if we just look at the pre-steroid era, is he didn't have a strong throwing arm, but you also could not run on him because he was going to get to the ball, and he had such great fundamentals that he was going to field the ball and release the ball faster than anybody. And so he had to overcome the lack of arm strength in that way. And also, smart base runner, like just understood the game, really good hitter, had a great eye, wasn't swinging at pitchers' pitches, was forcing pitchers to come in. And you know, then he does get on juice and he just, you know, becomes like, you know, just becomes the Incredible Hulk with all of those other things that he could do. But like also the athleticism, 40-40, like he did it after Canseco did it. But I think Barry had a couple, like a season early on in his career where he was over 50 stolen bases and less home runs. But, you know, guys like that, I think you just gravitated to when it comes to like best player ever. Some of that is also just also winning gold gloves, also stealing bags or being fast runners. Like you would never consider Like, Will Clark could never fit that because, like, Jose Canseco called him a three-toed sloth.
You know, it's interesting. You're going through this whole, like, with Barry Bonds thing. And to me, that's the biggest tragedy of all. I feel like he didn't need to go on the juice. Like, he was, you know, I've never denied that he's talented. Even the people that want to defend, like, the A-Rods, the the Barry Bonds and their numbers, they always tell you, well, the juice doesn't allow you to make contact with the ball. That's still talent. But regardless, it's more about the message, right? We talked earlier about these young African-American kids trying to get a role model. Like, to me, you're sending the wrong message when you're saying, well, I'm just going to cheat in order to be the best. And it's also, to me, it also upsets me and it really pisses me off. Like, for example, right now we have like a Cal Raleigh, right, who's got 39 home runs. Nobody's ever going to get 74. Nobody. Like, it's damn near. I mean, I say nobody, you never know, but it's so difficult. And right now, had Barry Bonds not cheated, we would have been having a conversation right now. And it's pretty cool to have a legitimate home run chase, because 39 home runs by the break is going to put you at around mid-60s by the end of the season. And so I feel like Barry Bonds robbed us of that forever, pretty much. Like, we're never going to be able to have that conversation.
But you're also looking at this in the way of that players aren't cheating today. And I don't think that's the case. I think the drug testing is, you know, the drug testing is going to be as aggressive or not for the marketing of the game. Like, that's just the case, because, you know, you could probably be super stringent on this stuff and want to catch everybody. But then if you catch the wrong person, then you're putting that in jeopardy. And I'm not saying people, I would assume, just based on how sports work, that there are people in baseball taking steroids today.
Of course. I agree with you 100%.
And that's part of the thing, is you just don't know. And I was listening to a podcast with JT Snow. And JT Snow,
shit.
JT Snow, he played with Barry in these years that you're talking about. And he said that the hardest part for him as an ex-player in keeping out the steroid guys is that he knows for sure that there are guys who took steroids. They just didn't get caught, or they didn't get the finger pointed at them for whatever reason. So that's also part of the problem, is that there are people who did it and who are getting away with it. And then there are others who were so great that they got the finger pointed at them and they're like, oh, we need to find out what you're doing. And they're not going to get in for that reason. So the thing about, and I told you the Barry story, the reason why he did it was because McGuire and Sosa became so popular and were the marketing engine for baseball. And he's like, I'm better than those guys. Like, what the hell? Like, what? I know what they're doing. I'm still better than them. And they're getting so much more. Now, the part that he probably still hasn't realized is a lot of it is just personality. And he refused to give in on that stuff. He refused to put anybody over, as we would say.
On the wrestling side.
So that, you know, that's part of the equation that he probably will never understand. But, you know, he's talked about it in his past, of watching how hard his dad had it and just being so distrustful of the media, because he felt like the media sabotaged his dad in a way by, you know, his dad struggling alcoholic when Barry was growing up. And, you know, they that being publicized, and, you know, his dad, I guess, did Bobby play for the Red Sox? But there was a thing with the Red Sox where Barry had, you know, when Barry was on top, he was like, yeah, I would never play for the Red Sox because the fans are so racist in Boston.
Yeah.
And he said that before it was kind of cool to make fun of it in a fun way. But, you know, Bill Russell, same thing, played in Boston. I didn't know this. Bill Russell and Red Auerbach had the jerseys changed just to say Celtics instead of saying Boston, because of how Bill felt about the city when he was playing. So it's just stuff like that where, you know, it's kind of time and place and history, and you never know how someone is feeling. But the result is that, yeah, Barry's always going to have these conversations where people go, nope, he doesn't count because of what he did. And now A-Rod too. Well, I got to see A-Rod play Very early in his career. This is a very early part of interleague play. So Mariners come to town. I get to see Ichiro. I get to see A-Rod. And back then, A-Rod was kind of more like Ken Griffey than he would be the A-Rod that we know, because he was young, he was handsome, he was exciting, he was really good with the media, and then he turned into, you know, the A-Rod that we know. And the same JT Snow podcast, he said when he went to the Red, JT Snow played for the Red Sox for 1 year. He said when he went to the Red Sox, and, you know, it's Red Sox Yankees, he said something about A-Rod, and all the Red Sox players said, "We don't use that name. We call him Alex," because no one liked that guy. No one liked A-Rod back then. So it's kind of just interesting how that stuff changes and how, you know, you become like the dandy of baseball, and then all of a sudden you become like one of the most hated players. So anyways, so now Judge and Ohtani, they got to be, they are climbing that list of greatest players that you've ever seen, I'm guessing.
No, they're already there. I mean, Ohtani is for sure. Aaron Judge, I mean, he's a great contact hitter, right? But then again, I feel like they lost the World Series last year just because of him. You know, he started that era, really started the ball rolling for us to come back and win it all. But no, I think right now I'm very fortunate to see, in my eyes, the greatest baseball player that ever lived in Ohtani. That's a five-tool player right there. Maybe even, well, six-tool, because he could pitch.
Well, he doesn't really play defense these days because he is solely a DH. But I imagine if he didn't pitch and he really wanted to be a good outfielder, he would have been a really good outfielder, or even a move to first base, which maybe he may do later in his career. Like, he could totally. I sense that he is a good enough baseball player to have been defensively a positive on the baseball field too.
Yeah, hold on. What's that noise? There's a noise coming. Hold on. I'll be right back. Let me mute myself.
Sounds like Draven is... it sounded like there was something going on with the traffic. Like someone's just like leaning on their horn or something in his background, but he's going to figure that out. So I wanted to go back to this list. And so what I did is I separated the top 30 positional player wars of all time.
All right, man.
You know who comes at 27 of all-time positional player war? And you got to see this guy for a lot of his career. Adrian Beltre.
Yeah, I mean, he's another guy that was just phenomenal. He's a guy that we should have kept. I don't know why we didn't, but, you know, we've made a lot of mistakes like that. But no, but he was great. He just spent all his career with small market teams. So he's another guy that goes under the radar.
All right, let's do the Shohei and Barry thing. I don't know how you're going to eliminate the bias, like you said.
I don't know how either.
But if you look at the Barry that you saw in his prime, and now you're able to watch Shohei in his prime, two left-handed hitters, like compare and contrast, like what you see from Shohei and what you saw from Barry, because I just think when you have those great players like Judge and Shohei, the sound off their bat is just different, and you can see, like, he hooked one in the All-Star game, and it was like a pitch that was like almost like at his eyes, and he knew that he was going to give himself one shot to try and hit the ball 500 feet, and he hooked it foul, but he had a laser, and I'm just like, man, the hand-eye coordination and the reflexes and the quick twitch muscles, I don't think I've seen it since Barry. And there've been fantastic hitters over the years, but those are the two guys maybe ever that I've seen with my own eyes where I just see the ability to basically do anything they want, power and contact, And you know, they're going to strike. Shohei probably strikes out a little bit more than I would like, but to see, well, if I want to see him strike out every time, but from like that great player perspective,
I feel like he does. So there you go.
From that great player perspective. But part of it is what you said, which is the way that they teach hitting today. You know, Barry had some heavy strikeout years, but as he got older, he didn't really strike out barely at all. But yeah, compare and contrast those guys. Cause I think I don't think people realize, because baseball is a little bit less popular nationally, I don't think they realize how good of an all-time player Shohei Ohtani, like in 10 years, they're going to look back and go, okay, he's a top 10 player of all time. I don't think people look at him like that right now, though.
Well, I mean, locally, obviously we do. And we're talking about that again. My lens is filtered different than yours is, because locally, I mean, you can't go past a couple miles and you'll see a mural of the guy all over the city. But to answer your question, I think it's two different eras. First of all, I know that's going to sound like a cop out, but that's the truth. Two different eras. Barry Bonds was coming up on a time where you didn't have more than maybe a couple of guys that would hit 100. As far as pitching, I mean, he came at a time where it was more about finesse. So that means that he had to learn how to protect the plate different than Shohei did, because Shohei Ohtani is all about velocity. He's thinking about velocity, whereas Barry Bonds is more about finesse and working the corners and, you know, the off-speed stuff, you know? So I really, really admire the way Barry Bonds would protect the plate. I mean, it was different. Anything down and in, it was gone. Anything down and in, gone. Now, it's interesting, too, because you say you're comparing these two guys' peak periods, but Barry Bonds had two peak periods. He had the one where the more natural one where his numbers started, and you see that if you see his numbers start going down a little bit as he's turning 33, 34 years old.
He kept getting hurt too. He was constantly he couldn't play the same speed game as he got older, and I'm sure that played a part of it.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden his numbers start to go up again as he's going into his late 30s, and you're thinking, what's going on here? So he really had two peak periods. The first peak period is the one where he was a 5-tool player, in my opinion. Like you said, he could run for power, speed. He could hit for power, I should say. He's a good fielder. He really knew how to protect the plate well. He also had more walks because, A, at that time it was more of a strategy, and B, because we have two other MVPs behind Shohei. Shohei doesn't get a lot of walks, you know? Why are you going to walk Shohei when you're going to walk into Mookie or Freddie Freeman? It doesn't make any sense. So Barry Bonds per capita had a ton of walks. Yeah, I think he leads all time. He's a leader in walks. According to him, because remember, this guy doesn't put anyone over. He said that because they asked him about Ohtani, and he's like, well, it's a different time. He's getting more at-bats than I would, because I would either get walk or they would hit me. Like, they would just hit me to put me on first.
So he would wear that big, remember the big old armor, big old elbow thing?
And so they don't really walk Ohtani that much, you know? But I think as far as consistency, again, I would have to go with Bonds. I think Ohtani, he just goes out. He swings. He gets the green light way too many more times than I'm comfortable with, you know, and he'll take hacks that are nowhere near the plate. And so that hurts him. Whereas Bonds, I feel, was more disciplined, you know?
I think Ohtani went deep again today, by the way. You guys are tied 3-3 with the Brewers, but, yesterday,
well, we need a win.
Yesterday he hit like a 360-foot bomb. Today he just like kind of he just threw his hands out and hit one over the left field wall, like wall scraper. But
another thing too that I wanted to mention, when you're talking about just the sound of the bat, one of the newer metrics is the bat speed, right? They're measuring bat speed, bat velocity, because every time you get these guys hit, the thing about MLB nowadays that's a little annoying. Remember that one? I think it was this year's Royal Rumble where they had all those stats down there, and it was just too loud, you know. It's the same thing with MLB now. It's like they're constantly throwing stats at you. Like every time a guy hits a home run, you're getting like five or six different stats of that home run: how far it went, the bat speed, you know, all the, and it's like, yo, I just let me enjoy the game, you know. I don't need to know all that stuff. But that's one of the reasons why it sounds different. These guys have this incredible superhuman bat speed, man, where their arm just, you know, and so I could see why. There's a reason why it's not our minds just being fans like tripping. Oh, it makes a certain sound. There's a reason these guys swing creates that sound, you know.
We have to talk about the other thing that Ohtani has that makes him just so different from anybody else that we've seen is he was also a near Cy Young Award winning starting pitcher. Now we'll see how the Dodgers use him. I think the most he's gone is three innings so far since he's come back from his second Tommy John surgery. But just the fact that he can be your number one starter and your best hitter is amazing. And like, that is something that I don't think people will really, really wrap their minds around until later in his career. And then, you know, there'll be lots of stuff, especially as he goes into the Hall of Fame and stuff. But that is the most incredible part to me.
Do you think, do you think this is going to affect baseball? Like, more people are going to want to become like dual players like that, like pitching and hitting.
I think it's hard. I think people are going to attempt it, but it's so hard to do because when it comes to player development, like the good part about Shohei is he was already developed when he came to the Major League Baseball. He was already great, and it was just him getting used to the differences in the American game. But when you have these young players and they're going through development, like the Giants drafted a kid named Reggie Crawford, and it was a late first round pick, so he wasn't like a top five prospect or anything. But he threw in the high 90s, and he was a left-handed hitter who hit bombs. And so you're like, oh, like, could he be the next Shohei? And very early, they were like, look, we drafted you. We're going to let you do some of this because we said we would. But your upside is as a pitcher, and we're going to develop you as a pitcher because if you develop him as both, you're kind of splitting the time.
Right,
and I'm
right.
sure in their eyes, they're like, well, we could give you 100% of time as a pitcher and you will develop in the way that we want, or we split it 50-50 and maybe you don't get there in either way. And so we're kind of wasting your capability. So I just think it's so hard for the young players. Now, if you have more, I think it probably would take a player who was doing it at a high level on an international scale. So
that's
that
the only way it's going to happen.
Because of the development piece of it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he has that resume. Look, I could do it. I've been developed, and like Ohtani. Ohtani was able to play all those years in Japan, being a hitter and a pitcher, and he was able to come to this country and continue to be a hitter and a pitcher. Also, he ended up with the Angels, which tend to have a very loose, like, they're not really, you know, too involved in that kind of stuff.
And it was part of the deal. That's why he chose them. They're like, you can do whatever the hell you want. And then when he became a free agent, like, what team who wanted him was going to say, no, we're not going to let you also pitch. We only want you to focus on hitting. No team was going to say that because then he would have crossed them out immediately. And that's why the Dodgers and I think it was the Blue Jays and the Giants, they were right there because they were willing to match the numbers of the contract and give him kind of carte blanche in everything that he's currently doing. And, you know, some of that was that the translator guy who got caught stealing from him. Anybody who wanted him, you would go back and say, of course you get to do whatever you want because you look at the output that the guy gives you. He's just one of the greatest players of all time. And I think when it's all said and done with his career, he is going to be on that list of, you know, who are when you and I are growing up, we heard Willie Mays, Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron,
Ty Cobb.
Those are like the tippy top. And I think people who grow up after Shohei's career is over, I think he's going to be on those lists. And I told you I was at the Hall of Fame recently. A lot of the stuff at the Hall of Fame was like, okay, this stuff is cool. Like, but I already know all of this stuff. But when you go see the plaques and you go through the history of baseball from the very first Hall of Fame crew all the way to the current ones. Like, you're going through so many players and going like, oh my gosh, I forgot about this guy. And then you see, oh, Nolan Ryan. I told somebody that I was there, and he's like, just take a picture of the Nolan Ryan plaque for me. And I was like, okay, I'll take a picture of Nolan Ryan. But going through all of those guys, that was like, okay, this is why I'm still such a fan, because of all of the guys who paved the way and created this history of the game. At that part,
except when you saw Scott Rowland's name on there, because he's the one that doesn't really.
That was an interesting one. There are a couple people like that in recent memory because of the analytical slant that you talked about, because you're measuring things, you're measuring value in a different way than you did back then. So, yeah,
Larry Walker, I think, is another one that I don't know if he gets in without the analytics.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But, you know, then again, I'm sure there are guys who got overlooked because of they didn't play in the biggest market, or they weren't the most fan favorite or whatever. Yeah. So, all right. So last thing, and again, you're going to have to sell a little bit here. I asked you to come up with a couple of Giants players who, of course, you didn't like, you didn't hate. But maybe there was a little bit of a fear and respect because of how they played against your team. Because I have two specific ones, but they're from when I was a young kid versus, okay, you know, versus today's. So I'll give you the first one for me. Pedro Guerrero. I always thought, now, again, I have to hate this guy, I just thought he was so cool. He just looked like a cool dude, standing very tall and upright when he was swinging. Now, he wasn't a great, great player, but he was a really good player for you guys.
Yeah.
But I just liked, his helmet, the way he wore the helmet, the way he wore the batting stance and everything. I just thought, okay, you know, Steve Garvey, I hate that guy. Even though he was a little bit before my time as a baseball fan on the Dodgers, he would have been on the Padres at that. But I think about those Ron Say and, you know, those Dodgers teams, and who was the pitchers before Fernando, and like Don Sutton and guys like that. Like, I was like, those guys are like so boring. There's no flavor to them. But Guerrero had some flavor to him. He was kind of cool. I was like, okay, I can kind of dig with this guy, even though, you know, he was pretty fiery and he beat the Giants too. But that would be the first one that comes to mind.
Okay. Oh, so we're going back and forth?
Yeah. Just if you have one or two, we'll end the show with this.
I was gonna be a dick and say Dave Roberts, but I'm not gonna do that to you. I'm gonna go with Matt Williams. I love that guy. I always respected him. When I was a kid, it always tripped me out that he would lick his sleeve whenever he would be getting ready to bat, which is fucking weird. But
yeah,
that was his thing. Very humble, and always putting up the numbers at third base, you know. I think you guys lost him to the expansion, right? That's when he left.
No, actually what happened, and this is actually an incredible story, because they traded him for Jeff Kent. There was more to that trade, but essentially it was Jeff Kent was younger and cheaper. And they needed a couple of pitchers as well. So, and Matt Williams was making a lot of money back then. And so they traded him. And when they traded him, Giants fans considered that like maybe the worst trade in team history. And 2 years later,
I was going to say,
they went on to win the West in 97. And so it paid off. It took a couple of years, but it paid off. And then in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s, it really paid off, because then he won the MVP that 1 year. But he and Barry like didn't like each other at all. Like, Jeff Kent and Barry were always arguing and feuding. And I think Barry grabbed him by his throat in the dugout one time and told him to shut up. Like, they did not like each other. But yeah,
have video of that, right? Because I remember seeing that on the news. Like, they actually went at it in the dugout.
Yeah, yeah. But Matt's a good one, and Matt's back with the Giants. He's the third base coach right now.
Because he's been a third base coach for a few clubs.
He was the manager when the Washington Nationals were the best team in the National League, but then the Giants beat them in 2014 in the in the divisional round, I think, or I think it was a divisional round, because I remember that series very well, because that was when Hunter Pence was doing the yes chants.
Yeah.
And Brian Danielson came to AT&T or Oracle, and he did the yes chants before one of the playoff games, one that they lost, by the way. But yeah, that was the Nationals. Like, I think they won like 100 games that year or something like that with Matt Williams as their manager.
That's my pick.
He's was actually on the field last year, because my buddy, he is the radio engineer. And so he got us a pass. So I got to hang out in the booth with John Miller and Dave Fleming, the announcers. But we got on the field and we were just like not even close. And Matt Williams was working with Matt Chapman and he was hitting him fungos. That dude is intense, and he has still got these giant arms. He's got to be like in his early 60s at this point.
Out there.
Giant arms, just intense. Like, I swear that he was like mad at us for being there, but I think he was just, you know, coaching and doing his thing. But
always had that look, like, don't mess with me look, you know, that vibe.
You know, John Miller does a great Vin Scully impersonation. But he does it in Japanese. Have you ever heard this before?
Oh, is it on YouTube?
I think it's on YouTube. You listen to John Miller do Vin Scully in Japanese. Scully is one of the guys who everybody would respect. Like, when the Giants played the Cardinals in '87, I think Vin Scully was the NBC national announcer. And my dad thought that was the worst luck, because he's like, of course they got the Dodger announcer and he's going to be rooting for the Cardinals. And then, so he's like blaming Vin Scully on some of the games.
But that's not true at all, because
Vin is classic, man. He was.
Yeah, but also here's the thing about Vin. His heart will always be with the Giants.
Oh, and
that's something as Dodger fans, we all had to accept, you know, because he grew up with the Giants. That was his team. And, you know, he never shut up about the Polo Grounds and this and that. So he was always going to be a Giants guy regardless. And he even said it himself, you know.
So here's my second one. And I know you said Dave Roberts. I'm going to tell you, before Dusty Baker became the Giants manager, I always thought he was cool
he speaks fluent Spanish. That's why he's cool.
But the early ESPN days, when they didn't have all these sports, they would run a lot of these old video things where they'd show you all like the World Series and stuff. And so, you know, I'm just a little kid and I'm home from school and there's nothing on TV, and you just throw it on ESPN and they would show the Dodgers versus the Yankees World Series. And so you get to see Dusty, and I'm just like, this dude's name is Dusty, like Dusty Rhodes? Like, what? Like, what is going on here? And so then, you know, then you realize, you're like, oh, then he was played for the A's at the end. Then he came to the Giants in like the last stint of his career. And I was like, oh, that's a dude who played for the Dodgers, who I thought was like pretty cool, because he just played cool. He was just a cool dude. He always had the toothpick. And then he also had the same name as Dusty Rhodes. So when I was a kid, I just used to think Dusty Baker, because my dad would always say, what did my dad call him? His real name is like Johnny B. Baker or something. And so my dad would call him by his government name. And I was like, Johnny B. Baker is like a really cool name. Like, why did he go with Dusty? I don't know, for whatever reason. It's one of those
weird baseball things. All these guys have nicknames.
Yeah, but I mean, you know the story that Dusty Rhodes became Dusty Rhodes because there was a Giants player
the baseball player.
Yeah, it's like the 50s or whatever. His name was Dusty Rhodes.
All right, so I'm gonna go with now. When I say this guy's name, it was years later when I okay. So I'm gonna go with Kevin Mitchell. Ever since I saw him catch that fly ball with his hand, like I was all in on that guy. But he was also part of the rowdy 86 Mets team that won it all the way.
Yep.
And I feel like all the guys that left that team, like Doc Gooden, Strawberry, Mitchell, Lenny Dykstra, Keith Hernandez. See how much of an impression that team had on me. I remember to this day.
I remember that. Have you read the book on the 86 Rod, Mets?
Rod Darling. There's a whole bunch of them. No, I haven't. I want to read that.
There's a great book on the 8. I think it's a Perlman book. It's awesome. Those stories that you're talking about, they're in there.
But it was that 86 Mets vibe. It seems like they spread that disease wherever team they would go to. Like, they just have that cool factor to all of them. You know, they were all cool dudes. And so when Kevin Mitchell went to the Giants, I think it was in 88, I believe it was.
He got traded to the Giants in late 87, I think.
Okay, so his first full season was 88.
Yeah.
He was another guy that was just cool, man. I remember when they would play the Dodgers and I would see him on Fox 11. He would always be in the dugout with a big old smile and, like, you know, shadow boxing and stuff. He was just a guy that had a good vibe. Good player, too. Not great player, but good player.
He won an MVP. He did win an MVP. You know, the thing about Kevin Mitchell, he was a street dude. So, like, you didn't mess with him. One of those, like, don't mess with this guy kind of dudes. But yeah, he was like a, he had like this really, he's not in this steroid conversation, but, you know, I had my thoughts about it because he went from hitting like 20 home runs to 30 home runs to like 47 home runs, like,
yeah,
in a short span of time. But he also swung out of his shoes. But yeah, he's good. Now I'll put over the two guys that you guys have now, because Shohei, obviously, I was a big fan before. He's Japanese, so I've known who he was for a while. Part of him signing with the Dodgers that hurt my feelings was just like, I was like, I can never look at it's like LeBron signing with the Lakers. Like, I can never look at this guy the same way that I want to ever again. But the other one is Mookie. Those two guys, just great baseball players. Cannot even really say a bad thing about them. Like, they're just good dudes. So I have to put those guys over of the current era. But
one thing that low key bothers me about Mookie, and it's the old carny wrestling fan in me. So anytime a team comes to town, no matter the team, including the Padres, including the Giants, what Mookie does is that he gets one of the guys to do a podcast with.
Yeah.
And because he's got a podcast on, I think it's on Sportsnet. So he's over here, like, in this intense rivalry. And then, like, a day later, he's, like, talking to Fernando Tatis, you know, and, like, oh, where do you get your clothes? And I'm like, bro, try to keep some kayfabe here, man. Don't, like, that bothers me because you know what it is, bro? I'm going to tell you what it is. To me, it hits me home that these guys are like two millionaires, that they don't, you know, they got their money and they're just having a good time, and baseball's just their job, you know? And as a fan, I don't want to see it that way. We don't like the Padres. Don't be going, you know, or even the Giants, because I think he did one with the Dodgers as well. When they were in town. And it's like, bro, like, just, you know, and they're talking about their families and their cars. And I'm like, nah. Keep that kayfabe going. But Mookie, he's when he's on, he's awesome. He's had a bad year, but he's, you know, hopefully this is an off year for him.
Yeah, I feel like every time the Dodgers need a hit, like, it's Mookie. It frustrates me also that I just can't say a bad word about the guy at the same time.
No, he's a good guy. He's a really good guy. This guy that I'm about to name right now was lights out every time he would come up against us. He's a guy that was, to me, because he was with the Giants from around 92 to around 96. And he was the first guy that I saw that was like, this is a closer. This is like what a closer should look like. And I'm talking about Rob Beck. I mean, everything about this guy was awesome. His present, he was like John Tenta, where he looked like 45, but he was like 25. And he was what I would call like one of the last old school grimy, like, ball players. You know what I'm saying? He had that sweaty hat,
pot belly,
but he was a great closer, man. He was so great. Maybe because he was good against us. Like, I'm biased. Maybe you're thinking, oh, he was actually not that good.
For a few years, he was great, but. Again, you know, not a lot of these guys last forever, right? Like a Kershaw, you don't get like he's one in a million kind of guy.
Yeah.
Like Rod Beck, in the early 90s was awesome, but then, you know, he got a little older and his
and he was a drug guy, if I remember correctly. I think he was one of
I think that's how he died, actually.
Yeah, cocaine guys, like a Ken Caminiti type. But no, I remember I was just every time let's say we were going into the ninth and it was you guys were winning 3-2 and this guy comes on, it's over. Might as well change the channel, you know. I'll be like, finally, Superstars of Wrestling is gonna come on because this game's about to be over. but because that was always the show that would get bumped, Superstars of Wrestling in my local market. So I would go with Rob Beck. Yeah, great. He ended up going to the Cubs, I think. Right, that was the last. Yeah.
So if you want to hear, Draven and I also do a podcast on my other channel, Fight Game Media. We'll get back in a week or two to talk some 1984 wrestling and some current stuff too, because you got to go to All In, so I'll ask you all about that. But you know, this is a blast for me because Brad and I, when we do Thompson and Clark, we talk about some old school baseball every now and again, but we're so focused on the current team. So it's a blast for me to talk about the old days like this. Yeah, so appreciate you coming on.
Thanks. Same thing with me. I never get to talk about this stuff.
All right. So, that is it from here. Brad and I will be back on Monday live streaming on YouTube, and we'll have the audio up Monday night. And then Brian and I will be back talking about the Valkyries in the upcoming few days as well. So, again, thanks to Draven for hanging out with us. And we'll do this, you know, we'll do this a few times a season. We're not going to do it too often, but it is kind of a fun thing because I think this rivalry, as much as you can call it a rivalry when we don't even play more than like 12 times anymore, it's still real to us. So,
you know, it used to be 24 times a year, I think.
I know.
Something like that.
They used to play a lot for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
So, all right. Thank you. I'll see you guys Draven, in the wrestling one.
Yeah. Wrestling for podcast. Draven, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional grade products and next day delivery. So you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com. Save big.